Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, our mission is, well, it's highly concentrated. We are not grappling with a huge policy paper or five different news articles. Instead, we're taking the deepest possible look at a single, incredibly powerful observation about a shift in mortgage finance. The source material is titled, Lenders Broaden Low-Rate Mortgage Access, and it gives us just seven words that capture this huge economic shift. It says, local lenders broaden low-rate mortgage access for buyers. Now, for those of you who follow the housing market, you know those seven words are. They're more than just an observation. They signal a pretty fundamental change in underwriting philosophy, maybe even in risk tolerance. We're not going to spend time explaining what a mortgage rate is. We want to dissect the strategic why behind the specific combination of who's acting and what they're doing.
That's exactly right. Every single word in that sentence is a variable in a financial equation. Our goal is to move past the simple description. You know, low rates mean lower payments, and get into the analysis. We need to figure out the strategic implications of three interconnected things. First, the unique role of these local lenders. Second, the actual mechanism of broadened access. Mm-hmm. And third, the calculated risk involved in pairing all of this with a low-rate mortgage for these specific buyers.
It's almost like a forensic examination of a statement of fact. So let's start at the beginning with the who. Why does the source specifically point to local lenders? Why them and not the huge national banks we usually think of when we talk about mortgage volume?
Right. It's a critical distinction.
When you think about the big national players, their entire model is built on one thing, standardization. They have to rely almost exclusively on algorithms, FICO scores, automated valuations, streamlined debt-to-income checks. It's all because they need to process millions of applications across totally different markets, and they need to do it fast.
It's a system designed for pure volume and uniform risk management.
Exactly. But the source points to the local institution. So I want you to think about that contrast. What is it that these local banks or credit unions have that allows them to make a move where the giants won't?
I'd say the defining characteristic is their ability to do manual underwriting and to use localized data. A national institution sees a loan application through a set of, you know, very rigid data points. It's all designed to prevent risk everywhere system-wide, but a local lender. They can look at that same application through the lens of a relationship of specific regional knowledge.
Okay, can you give an example of that?
Sure. So a national algorithm might instantly flag a borrower who, say, works on commission, or maybe they just started a small business. The algorithm sees high volatility risk. But the local lender might know that specific small business. They might know it has a long-term contract with the local government. Their risk assessment is based on deep, non-standardized intelligence.
Intelligence about the local economy and, I guess, the borrower's actual situation. Yep. That difference manual review versus an automated no is absolutely critical to understanding this. But, you know, even with that local knowledge, they still have capital requirements. What's the strategic payoff for them to take on what looks like higher risk? Why not just stick to the easy conforming loans?
And that's the strategic why of it. For a big national bank, the goal is often high velocity transactions. They originate the loan, they get servicing revenue, and then they sell it off to the secondary market fast.
Right, it's a numbers game.
It is. But for a local lender, the whole incentive structure is different. They are fundamentally invested in the long-term health of their own community. When a local lender helps a buyer get into a home they can afford, that buyer becomes a stable, tax-paying resident. They keep their capital in the community.
So it generates this long-term benefit for the bank itself.
Absolutely. Through deposits, other services, a stable real estate tax base. Mm-hmm. That last one is huge. It anchors the value of all the properties they lend against. They're not just maximizing short-term interest. They're strategically cultivating long-term local wealth. And that stability, which they can see because of their local knowledge, is the justification for the calculated risk. The whole town is their portfolio, not just one mortgage.
Okay, so if the local lender is the agent and they're operating with this community-focused mandate, the next step is to define the how. How do they actually broaden access? This takes us from philosophy to the specific mechanics of underwriting.
Exactly, the nuts and bolts.
Right, so let's get into those technical mechanics. When the source says broadened access, we're really talking about adjusting eligibility. And in the world of mortgage finance, that mainly hits three things: credit profile, debt to income ratio, and down payments. For our listeners who know conventional lending, where are these local lenders really pushing the boundaries?
The most immediate area is almost certainly the DTI ratio, debt to income. For a standard conforming loan, you usually see a pretty hard cap around 43%. That's your total monthly debt payments versus your gross monthly income. If local lenders are serious about this, they have to be pushing that boundary.
To what, like 48%?
Maybe. Maybe even 50% in some cases. But the key isn't just raising the number. It's how they calculate it. A national model is rigid. A local lender, using that manual underwriting, might approve a higher DTI for a buyer if they can factor in other things. Maybe that town has super low property taxes, for instance.
Or they can see the buyer has a history of managing high housing costs without ever missing a payment.
Exactly. They are trading a generalized risk for a specialized verified stability.
That still feels like a pretty big leap of faith, though, even with local knowledge. A DTI near 50% doesn't leave much room for error if someone hits a financial bump. Isn't there a danger that this just starts to look like the subprime lending we saw in the past, even if the intention is good?
That's a really important question. And it highlights the calculated difference here. The key difference is the transparency and the quality of the actual debt product. Subprime was all about deceptive terms, you know, high fees, predatory adjustable rates that would suddenly explode. It was all designed for short-term lender profit.
Whereas here, the product is explicitly a low-rate mortgage.
That's a low-rate mortgage. So it means low long-term expense and generally clear, stable terms. And another thing, the broadened access isn't just about ignoring bad credit. Often it means accepting non-traditional credit data. And this is maybe the most fascinating part. If a buyer has a thin credit file but can show, say, 10 years of on-time high rent payments.
Or perfect utility bill records.
Yes. The local lender can manually verify that history and use it as a proxy for creditworthiness. An automated national system would just spit out a low score and a rejection. This intentional inclusion of alternative data is what fundamentally changes who can be a buyer.
So broadened access is really a mix of a detailed manual review of income, allowing for a higher DTI in some cases, and accepting these proxy credit data points. It's a very specific, intentional shift in the rules. Okay, now let's bring in the third piece, the thing that makes this so powerful, the low-rate mortgage.
The incentive.
The incentive. Mm-hmm. A low rate is what turns this from just an opportunity into something sustainable for the buyer. We know it means lower monthly payments, obviously. But for our audience, the strategic value of that low rate is about way more than just the monthly cash flow. It changes the whole long-term wealth equation.
Absolutely. The benefit of a low rate just compounds exponentially over a 30-year loan. A greater chunk of every single payment goes to principal reduction, not just interest expense.
Which means you're building equity faster.
Way faster. And equity is the real driver of household wealth, especially for first-time buyers or people who were previously locked out. The power of this finding is in the coupling of these two things. If local lenders only broadened access, but then charged super high rates to cover the risk, like the old subprime model, the buyer would barely build any equity and the default risk would still be high.
Which brings up the big question. Why would a lender who has just bent the rules on DTI and used non-traditional credit to qualify someone, why would they then turn around and offer them the best possible product, a low rate? It sounds almost like financial altruism, which, you know, isn't a great business model.
It's not altruism at all. It's smart, long-term portfolio management. It's risk mitigation.
How is it risk mitigation?
Because the local lender understands that the low rate itself reduces the risk of default. Think about it. A buyer with a 50% DTI at 3% interest is far less likely to default than a buyer with a 40% DTI at 7%.
Because the lower payment gives them a bigger cushion.
A huge cushion against any kind of unexpected economic shock. So the local lender is making a calculated trade. They're basically saying, we will accept this non-traditional risk data.
The broadened access part.
In exchange for securing a highly stable, affordable debt product for you, the borrower. Because that low-rate mortgage maximizes your chance of success, which in turn secures our long-term community investment. By keeping that loan on their own books, they ensure that the wealth-building process happens, making that customer a lifetime asset, not just a one-off transaction. The low rate is the price they pay for long-term stability and local loyalty.
Okay, so let's put it all together. Let's synthesize these choices and look at the outcome for the buyers. When we look at the segment of the market that gains the most from this combination of local flexibility, tailored underwriting, and low rates, who are we actually talking about?
Yeah, who is the beneficiary?
We're talking about, say, the entrepreneur or the recent graduate with a ton of student debt but a really high future income. the stable renter with a good job who just doesn't have generational wealth for a big down payment. These are the people who are priced out, not because they can't afford a payment, but because of algorithmic rigidity.
That's it, exactly. This shift primarily benefits the buyer who has what I'd call character and cash flow, but lacks a conforming credit score and a big pile of savings. These are often prime candidates for successful homeownership, but they are systematically screened out by the automated systems.
And when you connect that to the big picture,
the impact is systemic. The entire goal of this localized policy, the local lenders, the broader criteria, the low rates, it's all designed to convert reliable community members from renters into homeowners.
From people who are transferring wealth out of the community via rent to people who are building equity and stabilizing that local economy.
That's the whole game. The mechanism is so targeted. That ability of the local lender to manually review rent history or to understand a buyer's non-W-2 income, that's the key. It shifts the burden of proof from an impersonal number on a screen to a personal, verifiable history. The whole thing is designed to deliver that wealth-building vehicle, the low-rate mortgage, to people who were previously denied it.
It really confirms that the finding isn't just a market trend. It's about intentional, localized inclusion. So what does this all mean? We started with just 7 words, and I think we've uncovered a really cohesive, intentional strategy. The essential finding is that local lenders are proactively engineering a successful entry point into the housing market. They're using their hyper-localized knowledge to remove barriers, that's the broadened access, and to improve the long-term affordability, the low-rate mortgage, for these deserving buyers. This is not a description of random market momentum. It's a description of targeted strategic intervention.
And, you know, that brings up a final thought for you to explore. Given that the success of this whole thing hinges on the trust, the local knowledge, and the manual underwriting capacity of these local lenders, How could larger policy mechanisms, say at the state or even national level, effectively replicate that, replicate the trust and responsiveness that's inherent in this local model?
That's a huge question.
It is. If local knowledge is the secret ingredient, how do you design incentives or data systems that allow standardized finance to capture that same kind of nuanced risk mitigating intelligence?
How do you scale local trust? That is the challenge. A great question to take forward as you look at housing policy. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into just 7 powerful words. We'll catch you next time.